Welcome to the Unscripted Podcast. This is Caitlin. Each episode, my Uncle Aaron interviews guests that are living their lives unscripted. The song you are hearing is the music from our dear friends, Tori and Shauna. You can find their music wherever you stream your favorite songs. For now, from his studio, here's my Uncle Aaron.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Unscripted from my Jerseys of Hope Studios here in Columbus, Ohio. So I got an OG on, one of the very first, I don't know what number it was. It was in the top five. So top five.
Why do I feel like two or three? I feel like I was there.
I really do too. I feel like it was maybe two or three. So right there, man, Ryan, can you just introduce yourself to our audience and we'll go from there.
Hey y'all, Ryan Grammatico coming to you live from Huntersville, North Carolina, just a suburb of Charlotte. Long time listener, first time caller. Just kidding, second time caller. excited to be here. I feel like we need to cue a mod with Back in the Day and get the little background music going. So now I'm just excited. Devoted dad, love my wife. Just an amazing life that I get to live here, and just I'm all about vibes. So here we are.
Here we are. And I was going to play Return of the Mac, but it's probably going to be some violation, so I can't. But it is the Return of the Mac, my guy. So and we were just talking about this, man, from episode, let's just call it episode 3, because I'm pretty sure that's where it was. Episode 3 to episode 276.
Yeah.
My mic, I actually have a microphone now. Nice. It's not a Zoom meeting. I have a background. You have a mic. You have a background. Like, man, like, well, here we are, right?
We done come up. Mama, we made it. There we go.
Started from the bottom. Here we are.
That's right. AirPods that were like, you couldn't even hear anything. Who knew what was going on half the time? Tingy, all that fun stuff. But here we are.
Here we are. All right. So let me give a Cliff Notes version to anybody that missed episode. Let's just call it episode 3. And that's why I wanted to have you back, because episode 3 gets buried and people don't get a chance to go back and listen to it. But man, you dropped a lot of wisdom. So let me just give the Cliff Notes version. I met you because there was a movie called Jesus Save Us from Our Followers. From your followers? What was it called?
Lord Save Us from Your Followers.
All right. Lord Save Us from Your Followers. I don't even remember. It's been that long. But I picked up the phone because there was a chance to have the movie in your town if you could guarantee that you could get a certain amount of people. So I pick up the phone. I call and I talk to this guy named Ryan, and he tells me all about this movie that is still amazing. I still believe it's a powerful documentary. So if people can find it, awesome. But that is how you and I met.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the year was, but man, it is crazy to me. So I want to bring everybody up to speed. Since that time, we just connected, man. We had a phone call. It was powerful. Yeah. We had this like instant brotherhood. And since then, you have become one of the most influential, most powerful, most meaningful people in my circle of life. And I've shared things with you. We've been through it over the last several years. So I just want everybody to know kind of who you are in advance and who you are to me, man. You are my brother. You literally are my brother. I sent you a text just 90, almost 100 days ago.
Yeah.
On one of the worst days of my life. Yep. And you were right there. Yep. And so, man, I love you. And I just want everybody else to love you too, which is why I had you on episode 3, is because you are the man and you're an amazing human being. So welcome back, brother.
Thanks, man. Who would have thought here we are all these hundreds of episodes later in that time of COVID shutting the world down, and we were walking through racial tensions and all sorts of stuff that was just happening. I mean, I had two new babies at that moment, I believe too, maybe even just Nathan. Maybe just PJ. I don't know. Whatever. There are two toddlers around here now, 4 and 2 years old. So whatever it is, worked. And I do want to, let me give you some flowers while you're here too. Man, you have been a lifeline at so many points in my life, from ups, downs, and the middles. And just, we talk that cliche about iron sharpening iron, but really it is. We have been, I think we connect on a level of husbands, dads, sports, you know, fans, those types of things. But like, there's always the common denominator of our faith. And that always brings us back to like legitimate, not the, like you said, not the cliche stuff that's out there, but really brothers. And I'm thankful for that and what you've been to me and my family. And just, I wouldn't be here today. Honestly, it's I can say that honestly, I wouldn't be here literally because it's your studio. So I wouldn't be
here. 100%. Well, and I'm rocking. It's important that I mention I'm rocking my Liberty gear today.
Go Flames.
And so when we first met, I think mine were just littles, man. You know, we used to make the journey to OBX every year. And one year we got to meet up with your littles and we all got to have a meal together, and your littles are not littles anymore and neither are mine. But here's my only issue is we're recording when Liberty's convocation is taking place. And I'm a little ticked off because honestly, like, I don't like to miss convocation because my baby girl is at Liberty, and man, I love me some Liberty convocation. So I'm a Liberty honk now. I'm all in, chips in the middle of the table. Yeah. So I'm a little frustrated, but I'll go back and find it. It'll be on YouTube. But man, Liberty doesn't miss, dude. Liberty doesn't miss. So talk to me about Liberty. That's your alma mater, man.
Yeah. Honestly, Liberty was the foundational place for me to be introduced to God. I was 6 months into my faith at that moment when I stepped onto campus. So I didn't know anything. Had a little green Gideon Bible and $35. True story. I just arrived, hadn't been accepted yet. I just pulled in. Someone said, one of the guys on the phone said, arrive. And so I showed up and they gave me a room key without being accepted. That was wild. So I had a dorm, got in. But that place transformed me for a couple of reasons, because it was the first place I really encountered God. It was pretty amazing. And then it was also because I was surrounded by so many believers. And that was new for me. And at first, it intimidated me, scared me, depressed me, because I'm like, I'm not like them. I don't understand. I don't connect like they're talking about, these words they're saying. In fact, there's one little story I want to share that I remember being in an Old Testament backgrounds class, and the professor was talking about David and Goliath and going back. And so I just raised my hand and I said, and he just said it in passing. I said, who is David and Goliath? And he kind of undressed me a little bit in front of the group of like 150 kids. And I remember being just devastated. And so I went up afterward, and I won't say his name. It's in my head right now. I'll say it. But I went up and I said, Professor X, can I, not literal Professor X, but I said, can I tell you something? I said, literally 6 months ago, July 3rd, 1993, I'm sorry, 1995, I just kind of came to my faith. And so I don't know any of this. I've never read this. And he was embarrassed, devastated himself. He felt terrible, and then took me under his wing, which was pretty cool on that side. But it was a hard moment for me in the beginning, because everybody seemed like they were light years ahead of me. And if you've ever been in a place in life where you're like at the beginning of something and everyone else seems so far ahead, just a hard place, especially when you're young. I mean, you're in your teens at that point, you know, it's tough. But that place, Liberty. Man, you talk about convocation. That's way different than what we had. I mean, I see these cameras and the arena full. I mean, we had to go. It was that kind of thing. And people were always trying to get out of it and sleep through it. But I loved it because, again, I had no church background. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was another impactful moment. We'd had the most amazing speakers, amazing music, and it was really cool. Like, it was just, I loved it. It was something that I always looked forward to every week on a Wednesday. So I'm glad it's still rolling and even improving and getting bigger and better, because like you said, all the hundreds of miles away you are, and you get to still be a part of it with your baby. So that's amazing.
It is amazing. I get to watch it on YouTube, and I'm sure that wasn't even a thing right back then. But man, yes, just a few. Toby Mack has been there this year. Sadie Robertson.
Yep.
Robertson has been there. Thank you. Duck Dynasty's daughter. That's how most people know her. Jonathan Isaac from the Orlando Magic. Yeah. Just a few weeks ago, one of the guys that I interviewed somehow on this podcast was on there, and that was crazy. Like, it's just been amazing. Last week they had Craig, 2 weeks ago before spring break, they had Craig Rochelle. I mean, come on. Like, seriously, it is a powerful, like, passion conference every Wednesday, and I don't miss it, because they don't miss. And I've loved sharing that with my baby girl and texting notes when people say things during that. Like, that's incredible, man. So this is a big old promo for Liberty U, but man, they produced a guy like Ryan Grammatico, and I'm thankful for that. And I'm thankful to see the growth in my baby girl in her time there. Shout out Bryn. She's just growing like crazy. And I could not be more happy that she's where she is today.
It is such an incredible place. It's an incubator. It's really cool. Whether it's you're taking a math class, it's still faith-based. It was so cool to be around that many believing young people was really powerful. And then to be led by professors and mentors and coaches, whatever it was, they would come alongside you and want the best for you. And we were always blown away, especially, you know, I leave there in 01 and I just go back now and it's a whole different world. I mean, it's unbelievable going back in there and seeing the growth and seeing what the university become, not just on an athletic field, which is cool, but also from the idea of the new things that students are able to access on a regular basis and always on the cutting edge, it feels like, of getting forward progress and what we're having happening. So it's really great.
Well, our guy, Micah Tyler, recorded a music video there.
Nice.
So there's that. All right. So that's Liberty. And did you win an intramural championship at Liberty?
I don't want to brag, okay, but I do have a few intramural championships under my belt. I've got a basketball championship. I've got a couple flag football championships. I've got a softball championship. Light work, baby. I mean, you know what it's like. That's why we connect. Champions, winners win, we always say.
That's what we do. That's what we do.
That's right.
But I got to think that Liberty's scale is a little bigger. The sample size of the intramural, like, that's a gauntlet at Liberty. I'm not saying Mount Vernon was easy, but, I mean, we only had so many students, right? Like,
That's right.
Liberty was probably more of a gauntlet. Like, Liberty was the ACC of intramural champions. So. Yeah.
It was, well, they would let like the actual scholarship athletes play outside of basketball. So football players who were probably like high school All-Americans, right, are coming in and you're just bodying up big guys, or you're out on the football field with it might be a basketball player now, but he was, you know, a D1 prospect as a quarterback. And you're like, oh, this is different. Okay. Everybody, but there were, like you said, there were a lot, thousands of big pool to get in there. But I loved my time. Not only did I play, but I was also a part of the intramural program in terms of student life. So I got to referee, and some of my greatest bonds, like my core group of college buddies that we're still connected today, are all because we worked together in student life and we traveled and we did all sorts of fun stuff together. But week in and week out, having fun with other students as a referee, which is always crazy in general, but it was such a cool time.
All right. So let me ask you this, because I read this quote somewhere and I'm going to destroy the quote, but you are who you are on the basketball court. Is that true?
I would say that's 100% true. When I first got to Liberty, people would tell you that the refined person you see today did not exist. So
that's right. A little cocky, right?
There was cockiness. There were also some words that I don't use anymore that kind of flew out that I didn't know weren't acceptable, because the basketball court I grew up in, Flint, Michigan, they were acceptable and normal. Having people pull me to the side afterward, or honestly, like, I still remember this day, and I can't remember his last name. His name was Johnny. I just remember it just felt like a continual beef on the court. And one day I just squared up. I said, let's go. And he's like, what? Like, he's like, we don't fight, man. I'm like, oh, well, you were talking. I thought we were about to, let's get it. And then we had a few months there in that semester. I just remember like them saying what's up to each other, and it was cool. Yeah. And then playing together, those kind of, but it's just the court creates, you know, kind of, it draws out your natural self, not your adaptive self. You know, that kind of thing. So luckily it's better today than it was then, but still, jumper's still wet. That's all I can tell you.
Hey, it is. And you're in better shape than I am. And you're fantastic. I'm not in intramural shape yet, but I'm getting there. I did follow a guy to the bathroom one time at Mount Vernon. Same thing, about ready to square up, because
exactly.
Right. That's just how we rolled in the 216 and, you know, in Flint, Michigan. Nice. All right. Enough about that, man. I had you on today because you're just such an inspiration. What you do for a living is inspirational, and who you do it with. So can you just talk a little bit about just what you do for a living? Because it is so inspiring. And I love that you've taken your roots, your history, your, you know, all that, you put that kind of into one big bowl, you've mixed that up, and now that's your passion. And there's so few people in life who are living their passion. Like, hey man, how's work? Oh, living the dream. But they're not. You are. I really do believe. Yeah. I genuinely believe that you are living your dream. So can you just talk about what you do for a living, who you do it with, and then just, man, just open up the wisdom of Ryan to everyone else.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. There is something special that I can remember 15 years ago through my church volunteering with an organization here in Charlotte, did like group mentoring. As two guys, my buddy James and I would go into this group every week with these young kids, and we'd just kind of be mentors to them, but in a group setting. Instead of one-on-one, we had like 15, which was really cool because it's like, I don't know, it was just an eclectic group. So that began a journey of really wanting to be connected to this work. And that was with this organization called Right Moves for Youth here in Charlotte. And 2 years later, I was selling software, and my job was okay. It paid me well, but I just was floundering in it. I couldn't get the traction. I wasn't connected to it, like we talk about. And when I thought about it, I'm like, I wish I left the Thursday at that group meeting with Right Moves for Youth. I left and I went back to my office and I said, I wish I could connect my skills and my passion together. Like, I want to do whatever that was. I want to do that for a living. That'd be cool. Yeah. And I just started praying about it and thinking about it. And then honestly started navigating toward how do I make that happen? And I just started looking for jobs, and I'd never looked for a job before. Someone had always come to me and say, hey, you want to work? Blah, blah, blah. We know you. Come and do this here. And I remember going to the only place I'd ever found things, that was on Craigslist. And there was so weird that Craigslist even has job postings. But in the bottom was a nonprofit job that said Right Moves for You. And I was making fair money selling software. And I remember interviewing with them, with Right Moves for Youth, and the executive director at that time telling me this was going to be a part-time position. It's going to pay about $18,000 a year. Mm. And I said, in case no one heard me out there, I didn't say 80. I said $18,000 a year. And so, and it's just, we've never done this route. It was always volunteer led before. So they were bringing staff on board to help facilitate these groups, training them and sending them in. So I said, you know what? It was scary. Prayed into it. Said, let's do this. And I did. And did that first year, and jumped in 2011. And here I am all these years later, went from a program specialist of direct service, became a program manager where I started to oversee and work with students, and then also work with our specialists, became program director. And then right around COVID, when the pandemic hit, kind of had to make a transition, because two new boys being born and no childcare meant I needed to not work in an office anymore. Yeah. So I tried to quit. And they said, no, we're going to create a position where you're going to work from home, and we're going to use your good skills, which again are still there. I'm a community engagement director now. So I connect with our community partners. I still get to connect with students and tell stories. But the amazing thing about the story is it's all about connecting young people to transformative relationships. And that doesn't stop when you're 18 and you get out of high school. Your relationships drive the rest of your life. No one literally gets to live alone. Even in a monastery, monks are still with other monks. And so it's the idea that here we are with these kids and helping them with four main areas that we want them to graduate high school. We want them to be socially, emotionally well. That's such a big thing that has been so strong. That's why we do like a group counseling model in our group mentoring. We also want them to have, you know, be exploring new careers and like be ready for college. Maybe not everybody goes to college, but we know that in the work that we do with mostly underserved students, that we want to say, hey, if you want to be a doctor, yeah, I need you to go to college. But if you want to be a businessman, let's connect you with a network of people who are in business, and maybe they can help guide and mentor you along where you don't have to go for 4 years. You can maybe start selling products now and you're already there. So we're trying to help that. And then the last piece would be leadership development. So if we can help develop that leader inside of them, it's the powerful thing. But it all, Aaron, it always comes back to, and it's kind of why we're even sitting here today, it comes back to relationships.
100%.
It's what we do. We build transformative relationships, because young people can then believe in themselves. I mean, when you're an adolescent, geez, I don't miss being a teenager. Other than no responsibilities, that part was cool, like real responsibility. Part, right. But I don't envy the teen who's going through hormonal changes, who's going through life changes, who also then in the work that we do with, like I said, the underserved populations, has to also maybe deal with their lights being turned off, or maybe dealing with a single parent home heavily, or maybe dealing with its violence in their neighborhood. So they've got to be aware of that. Yeah. And then where can they go and have a safe place to process it? And that's what we provide. All those cool things, like I said, of graduating high school and college career readiness, those are all great, but they need a safe spot to process everything and anything. And that's what we offer through an amazing group of ourselves as specialists that go in and work with the students, but also with volunteers who come alongside from law enforcement, from teachers, counselors, people in Fortune 500 companies here in Charlotte. The banks load us up with volunteers to come in. Awesome. And we're always looking for more people to connect with young people, because everyone's story matters. And whether it's our teenager or whether it's the person who's 45 and trying to figure out what they want to do with their life, the story matters. And that's going to be the big thing that we're going to do. But that's what we're doing. We're just helping young people write their story by having a good plot and foundation to it so it can move forward in a good way. And then when, if and when things fall apart, they are socially and emotionally well, that they can handle it and then make good adjustments in what they need to do. Because that's life.
I think people think of North Carolina, at least I'll just speak for myself. I think people think of North Carolina, particularly Charlotte, it's the banking capital of the world, right? Like it's the, you know, little New York, whatever you want to call it. They don't think of impoverished,
right?
But you deal with a lot of that. There is a lot in that area. Is that right?
Yeah. In fact, they did a few years ago, the Chetty study, I believe out of Harvard, potentially. I can't remember where Chetty was, where he was out of, but they did a study that took the 50 largest counties in the country and did a study to talk about economic mobility. And so what they found out was out of all of those, Charlotte, which is in Mecklenburg County, out of 50, Charlotte was 50th. Meaning if you were born into poverty, you were least likely to get out of poverty. So we have always worked and been aware of that for a long time, well before studies happened, because Charlotte itself, of course, is in the South. And we remember just a few years ago, and I don't even mean still currently, is very segregated. So there are pockets and populations where not everybody has access to everything. It's all great. Yeah. So we come alongside of those young people, undergird them, prepare them to go. You may be, because the majority of, I think at least 75% of our students are in what would be considered poverty. That's a lot. You know, if we're serving 1,000, 750 are like, of just our students are poor. And so helping them to not do what poverty does. And that means just try to survive, make the mistake of the quick fix of whether it is stealing, crime, drugs, whatever the easy fix, like the self-medicating or the let me take something before I don't have anything else. We help that young person come along earlier and have that ready process through it all. And then come alongside them and just provide a place and a mentor that'll just help shift and direct their lives to the positive places.
And so I know why I love you dearly as my friend, and you're one of my inner circle. But I also think that that same, because you are who you are here in that inner circle, and that's who you are in life, which is why I adore you. And I just, why you're my brother, because I think it's important. We can be we can say things on Twitter. What does Mark Hall say? You can say what you think, but you'll live what you believe. And so you live what you believe, which is why you and I had just an instant, I think, bond. And so that's all high level things, but I think you also have a very granular relationship with the people that you work with. It's not just a high level position that you're sitting in. You said something on our first interview about, you know, you just said a lot of really good things on that first interview, and I've used the sound clips, and I'm going to ruin them. So I want you to, I don't want you to re-say them. I just want you to tell people your heart when it comes to an individual and a student that you work with, because that's who you are. And it's important that I think many of us need to be more like you in terms of understanding our world, and that we're not all the same. Yeah. And you know what I'm saying? Like, I think we especially in the world we live in today, it's very divided and it's very divisive, and there's just a lot happening, but you have found a way to break through that. And I try to as well, which is why, again, I think we're kindred spirits. I think I'm not about that. What I'm about is the heart of the whoever it is. And so can you just do a better job of that? Cause that was a mess, and welcome to Unscripted, but you just do a much better job of that, cause that's who you are. Right. And so when you work with students that are in poverty, or students that don't have the lifestyle that we have, or students that aren't the same color, you know what I'm saying? I'll just let you run with that, because you'll do a better job.
That's good, man. The minute you were saying that, I think the reason I've been able to be, whether it's success in the workplace or whether it's been strong and successful in creating good relationships, is because my empathy meter is so high. I have it so well, and I can connect with someone, and I can feel their pain, and it doesn't derail me. So even if I don't come from the same situation, even though the irony is all of these young people that maybe come from impoverished backgrounds, and some who don't, maybe just from challenging areas, that was honestly my upbringing. Like, I grew up in abject poverty, welfare system in Michigan. It was a challenge as a kid. My inner worth was damaged and destroyed. And so I can still have empathy for that 10-year-old Ryan, who was still hurting back then, and project that now out to help other people. So I sit with a teen, and the teenager tells me what their life is like. I can still feel that, because I still remember what it was like to, we joke about welfare cheese and powdered milk, but that was life. Like, that wasn't, and I, by the way, I know people talk about, oh, I'd kill for that cheese now. No, I wouldn't. I hated it. but it was how I lived. We had to survive. Yeah. So it's like, all right, I'm gonna eat the cheese and do that kind of thing. But the empathy piece allows us, and I think everybody, by the way, has it. Yeah. It's just you have to channel it and be aware. And you have to be willing. This is something we talked a little bit about before, but this is the part that's still important. You have to be willing to sit with people. It's not just, I can't be a bullhorn guy and just scream and go, hey, go over there. You know what I mean? Years ago, I remember studying sheep and shepherds. And sheep, and most people maybe know this or don't, but sheep are dumb. Their brains are so small, they're so very dumb. And so if you put sheep in the middle of a field, they will eat all the grass right there. They won't move to the other area where all the grass is. So the shepherd doesn't stand behind him with his staff and smack him and say, go over there. He literally gets to know them so well that they can hear his voice. Mm-hmm. He walks then over to the grass, to the new grass, and calls them over. He's like, I'm already here. Come over here. And so it's the same kind of idea, walking with young people. And it's not calling young people stupid, but we're all sheep because we just don't know which way to go. And whether it's a teen or whether it's my friends now, it's still, I want to go to an area, invite them to it because I'm sitting with them in it and then make sure they get there. And when I'm looking at that shepherd model, again, talking about their staff, you know, it has that hook at the end or on the end of it has that rounded. Most people think that is for, pulling the sheep around and yanking them over. Yeah, that can help. But really, it's about fighting off the enemy. Mm. So part of that sitting with is seeing what is holding a person back, walking with them in it, and then using that whatever tools I have, because I've been gifted with some things, whether it's through privilege or whether it's through position or hard work, I've got them. And I'm not holding them up and saying, I got it and you don't. But I'm going to use it and I'm going to fight off the wolves that are trying to hurt the sheep. And all the while still calling them to something new and something better. And that's the mindset, man. Like I used to be this dumb sheep. I'm still dumb.
Yeah.
But like, I'm more mature sheep. I'm a little older sheep. So I now remember what it was like and those types of things. And I still seek out a text, a call and say, hey man, I'm just in this. This is what's going on. So I still need those men around me that will go to the new grass and say, come over here instead of just letting me sit in it and be just feeling terrible. But the same thing happens for a teenager, man, when you're sitting with them and you get to hear their pain and hear their heart, that right there is for me a way to attach to them and their problem that they perceive as a problem. And then helping navigate it. Cause 90% of what we deal with is not really something that's terrible. Right? 10% of our life sometimes can be terrible, but 90% of it, it's just a perception of it. Oh my gosh, woe is me. It's all falling apart. Well, what's the worst that can happen in this? Oh, I fail my test. I have to take it again. Oh, it's the worst. That's crazy. But when it's your reality,
right?
And like you said, when the lights get turned off, your reality that you're in the dark. And so what that is, you're really wrestling. A teen will often wrestle through fear because they're like, oh my gosh, I'm in the dark and I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm scared and I don't have anybody to help guide me and direct me to that. My mom is trying the best she can, but we're in survival mode.
Yeah.
And so being a part of the work that I get to do and being a part of our organization to be able to pull that off and come around teens, which is really cool about this, Aaron, about the group thing, as a sidebar, is that it might be cool that me and you were speaking the life of young people. But what's really great is when young people start speaking the lives of each other. So now you're talking about peer support.
Yeah,
the leadership. Peers are coming along and saying, hey, man, I saw you struggling. I got your back. And that means the world. When someone who looks like you and is in your same situation comes alongside of you and says, hey, let's do this thing together. Mm. That's us trying to help them with their education, their connections, and their opportunities to find a better life. That's our whole goal. And so I think it's really cool. But that's kind of the synopsis of what I believe and how I operate. So that way, whether I'm working for Right Moves for Youth or I'm just being a good neighbor to Brad and Dante, I just want to be kind of what I want and deserve, you know? And for so long, maybe I didn't always believe I was worthy and feel great about that, but I still knew I wanted no one else to feel maybe the negative impacts of those things. I wanted to help and be a part of that. So that's kind of where I come from on this whole path.
I love it. Do me a favor. Pick up the mic because you just dropped it.
I was actually looking to see if I dropped the mic. But
sorry. All right. So before we get any further, where can people find everything you're talking about, your organization? And
That's cool. Yeah, you can go to website, of course. That's www.rightmovesforyouth.org. We're on social media like Twitter, Instagram is RMFY Charlotte. Pretty easy to find out there, as well as my own personal handles of at Ryan Grammatico. I try to keep it out there the same, so that way everybody can find me across the paths, because I just want to make this move. These relationships, keep them connected, yeah. You know? But yeah, find us. You know, hopefully maybe we've got the channels rocking here in Charlotte coming up, but we have a really huge 5K coming up on April 26th. It's a Twilight 5K. I know you put on the turkey trot there in your neighborhood and still do that thing. Well, we're in 28 years of doing a 5K. Wow. As our largest fundraiser. So it's amazing to see the people come out, not just to run, but to support our young people. And so that's coming up. So if you're in Charlotte or in the surrounding areas, we invite you out April 26th, come out to run and support our kids, because we need it. They need it. And our future needs it. So that's it.
Where do they sign up for that?
Yeah. RaceRoster.com. We'll have it. Just look for Right Moves for Youth or for Twilight 5K. It'll pull it right up on RaceRoster.com or on our website. It's there too.
Get there if you're listening and you're in that surrounding area, or if you're not and you just want to take a roadie. I'm not going to take that roadie, but if you're there.
And by the way, it's a walk too. It's a 5K race and walk. So all my walkers, get out here.
Come on, no excuses. So you're saying I'm a walker. All right. I'm all walker now. Okay. I do want to talk, because you mentioned this on our first episode too, and I didn't even know what this was. Yep. You said I'm an empath, whatever. And I didn't know what that was. And I've learned what an empath is. And now I know I am so an empath.
Yeah.
I do believe that it is a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
It is a blessing and a curse. And I think we are both like way in the high empath level, which is why we connect. We understand one another. We understand what that's like, but I do believe it's a blessing and a curse. Do you believe the same thing? And in your job, I have to believe it's a blessing and a curse, because we hurt when they hurt. We hurt deeply when they hurt, but we also have an ability to. I had two people last night. I work at a little hoop facility, and I had two people offer me a tip last night just for doing my job. And I'm not bragging. This is not a brag. It was hilarious. I was like, nah, man, we're good. Like, it's just my job, you know? Yeah. But I just think it was the blessing of. Yeah. Being an empath, I don't know, man. I just got to know them when they got there. And before they left, there two people were like, hey, you guys take tips? I'm like, no, like,
that's awesome.
You know what I'm saying? That's the blessing of being an empath. I think we just emotionally, immediately, 0 to 100, just get people.
Yeah.
That's the blessing. But man, the curse is when they hurt, we hurt. And when they really hurt, we really hurt with them. And it's emotion. I don't know. I guess I've just learned a lot about being an empath. And do you believe it's a blessing and a curse?
I would have said yes, but let me reshape that for us a little bit. I would say it's a blessing and a blessing in this sense. I used to really think, man, it hurts so much to hurt with someone like this. And then my mindset shifted to an idea it's essentially a superpower.
It is.
It literally is that we can sit with someone in pain. And the key to empathy is not just acknowledging their pain, it's understanding it, but it's also being in it and not destroying you. So there's growth that has to come from people who have their empathy levels high. You have to kind of learn how to regulate and do those types of things. And that's come from training, that comes through time, that comes through quiet, therapy. Whatever you need that's going to get there. But there is, it's hard. I will say that for sure. But man, the other side of it with seeing someone say thank you for them just crying out to what's happening in their life that they just can't understand. Even if it's as basic as a guy who's missing his meal and he just comes up and asks for a couple bucks so he gets something. I don't mind giving somebody a couple bucks, but I also want to hear why they're there. And so I'll hear the story. I now invite the tough story. My wife and I joked, I'm a grief eater. Meaning if someone has a really terrible story, I want to hear it because I don't want them to feel alone in it. And so I want to gobble it all up and I'm going to let them hold it and feel with it. And still they have to have processed through it. But I really think that on the other side, I will always say that it's a blessing and a blessing, because to be able to sit with someone in that hard moment, even if it wrecks me for a moment, I know that I'm there in that time with them because they need somebody strong. And that's where the superpower comes in, where we get to be that for them and we can help bring them back to a level ground and help undergird and stabilize them so that way they can get up to and kind of move forward. So like I said, I totally was like less, I thought curse wise, but man, I really went to the blessing and a blessing, because it blesses me to be able to do it, but it blesses them to be able to receive that. They need that from someone. And that's kind of where my mindset has kind of shifted over the past couple of years.
Well, I love it. Honestly, I really do. And that's why you're my dude, because I've always looked at it as a blessing and a curse. And that, and honestly, after you saying that, you're right. It is a blessing and a blessing, but I do think it's important. I mean, I've got probably multiple tattoos because you said it very well. I don't know that I process it well. I think I receive it, and I do soak it up like a sponge, their pain, because we're empaths. And so when I do sit with someone who's going through a tough time or walk through a season with someone, I'm with them. And, and unfortunately, I think I love what you said, because I think I do soak it up too. And that's a wonderful thing for that person. But I think as an empath, so now we're probably down a different path, but I think as an empath, you got to be able to separate a little bit. Yeah. You got to be able to decompress, because you're going to absorb what they're going through. And I love that. And we love that. That's why we're empaths. And God needs us to be those people for other people, but you got to find a way to separate. And otherwise you're going to end up in addictions or a lot of other things. Right. Yeah. I don't know. I think that's really important. I've never thought of that. I genuinely have never thought of that before.
Well, it does. You do end up, like you said, because when you start bottling everything up, it's no different than to my Michigan people, a 2 liter of pop. Southern people, 2 liter of Coke, because everything's a Coke. But like, if you shake it up, right, know that it's building up and it's getting like that. And so you can open it right up. It's no problem. You can open it. What's going to happen? It's going to get messy. It's going to get all over everything. And that's what happens, right? I hold everything. If I hold it all in and my boys don't pick up their toys, I can just blow up on one little thing. I could. Or I can sit there and slowly tap the top, twist it softly, let a little bit out, maybe in a walk. I can quiet myself in a time, whatever it's going to be, but you have to, there is a level of self-care that's needed by the empath. You have to be able to, and it's not the selfish kind, like, oh, I'm just going to kick my feet up and every day's a vacation, but it's taking so you can, you have to have a clean cup so you can be filled up properly. It's that same kind of idea. In order for me to handle load for someone else, I've got to be prepared. I've got to be emptied. I've got to be like, I can't let all those heavy emotions just linger. So I have to kind of shed them and clean myself out. So that way I'm in a better place for them. And that's going to be the key every time. You know, I think sometimes too, Aaron, I can get overwhelmed in the moment and it doesn't affect my in the moment emotions and actions, but later on, I still feel overwhelmed. And there's a book called The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And he has one that says, do your best. And if I was to tell you, define do your best, most people would say, oh, I've got to achieve as high as I can, be the best I can. No, being your best means being the best at what you are in that moment. Meaning, if I'm only at 70%, it means being at my best 70%. That I can't be a 90%er in this moment. I just have to acknowledge today's a rough day. I'm feeling this heavily, but I'm going to do the best in that 70 I can do. And if there are days where I'm 100, I'm knocking it out. If it's only 20, then I got to do the best 20 I got in me. Whatever you can muster, that's the best you can pull off, not the gold medal for everybody kind of mindset, you know? So giving myself that grace and compassion in those moments, because it gets heavy, it gets hard. I sometimes can forget too, because now that I live a life of resource and I'm okay, and I don't think about a gallon of gas anymore. You know that? Yeah. I used to always go, I got to drive around and find my gallon. Well, now I don't think about that. Well, I still work with young people who think about that daily. My coworkers might think about that daily, but I'm just like, I don't. So I want to get back in that mode of connecting into what they're thinking about and let them know that I get it. It totally makes sense.
I think it's important too for empaths to, and this is difficult because sometimes it requires, honestly, it requires more of the people around you. Because they have to adapt to your being an empath. And I think you just said it, like, I'm going to have a bad day. And you know, I think our kids immediately give us grace because I think God just stitched that in them. But our spouses, our good friends, our coworkers, they may not understand, man, Aaron's off today. Man, he's being a jerk today. Yeah. It's because I put everybody's oxygen mask on first and not mine.
Right.
Or, man, Aaron looks terrible. Like, what is going on with that guy? Well, it's because as empaths, a lot of times it's not what's going on with me. It's what I'm trying to process for everyone else that I've tried to do that with. Yeah. I don't know. That's a really, we could probably do 10 episodes on it being an empath, but well, yeah, but that's one, what I
one,
found.
One little point with that though, is really important to understand that when it comes to emotions and regulation and things like that, negative emotions can often be like Velcro. You know, they stick. And you have to really rip it off and get it off of you.
Yeah.
But it's ironic that healthy, positive emotions are like Teflon. They kind of just slide right off. Yeah. They don't stay around. So you have to engage those and like recognize those on a, like you have to give those more energy than the negatives. You just have to get the negatives off you. You have to like get it off in a moment, whatever it's going to take for someone. And I don't mean going down negative paths of self-medication, but I'm talking about the idea of, like I said, quieting yourself, meditation, prayer, talking with a close friend. My wife is great. She'll recognize, like you said, she recognizes that like something's heavy on me and gives me grace in those moments. But then later we'll just go, hey, what's going on? And I just get to unload it. And whether it comes out in tears, whether it comes out in me just being frustrated because I don't understand even why I'm feeling this way, we get to peel it back together and go, oh, there's the root. Oh man, I had this crazy talk with a guy whose marriage is falling apart. Oh,
yeah.
That makes sense. All right, let's spend some time together and get this off of me. And then we focus. Here's where I take that Velcro off and I just go, just because my buddy's marriage is crumbling in this moment doesn't mean that mine is. Right. Cause that's what happens. I also sit around, he talks about how discontent he is with his wife. And all of a sudden I'm discontent for no reason because that's what it is. So I have to recognize, oh, my marriage is great. We communicate a lot. We talk, we love each other. We're caring. We're partners. All this stuff is there. And it's like, oh, okay. It is good. Yeah. Perspective again, you know, that kind of thing. So it's always important to remember Teflon versus the Velcro.
All right, last point on this, and I know we're running out of time. Last point on this. I think as empaths, because we do focus so much on everyone else, we don't focus on ourselves, but we also don't maybe focus on the people that are the closest to us.
Hmm.
You just said that. That's so important because I think for me, I know maybe because I'm focused on everyone else and taking on all theirs and I'm processing and putting and doing, I don't focus on the needs of my own bride. Sometimes, you know, for Heather. And Heather's wonderful, to your point. Heather's wonderful about recognizing Aaron's having a bad day. This ain't the time. It's not the time to talk about this or that. And I know for me, I think it's a really, really important. And I'm learned. This is why I wanted to have you on, because maybe somebody else is going to learn this too. I probably need to be more intentional about her needs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm an empath and I soaked everything up that day and my sponge is absolutely drenched at the moment, but it doesn't mean that Heather's isn't too. And I don't need to listen to her and hear her day and how she's doing and ask her questions and fill her cup as well. For me, that I don't know, man.
Well, I would think right now, then whoever's listening, they need to stop in this moment, whether they have to pause or whatever it is, and send a message, send a note,
send talk, a text.
Just say, hey, here's a quick text. Hey, I'm thinking about you. And is there anything you need from me? You know, how are you on a scale of 1 to 10? How are you feeling right now about X, Y, and Z? Whatever it is, like, here's the part. I don't need to guide that for someone. They know already what they need to ask. It's just 100%. About stepping out. And here's the scary part, I think, for men. We're scared to hear the answer.
Yeah.
Right? But
there
is always, 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 always joy in the morning. So even after a dark night, and you have to hear something that might be about you, and you have to recognize that, oh man, I'm being too short with my wife lately. My sarcasm's kicking up too much. By the way, I'm confessing now rather than just talking about someone else, that it's being too much. And she's recognizing that. It's not me going, oh, you're just being insensitive. You're just being too oversensitive, Reem. You just need to get over it. No, it's me going, okay, I hear you. I validate what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I'm going to run with it. So those guys who are sending texts right now to their people, be prepared.
That's
because it's what you do. Be surrounded a good community. You can talk about this stuff, but it's important to ask, because all the stuff you're giving out all day long, you really need to be priority with your wife, with your close people, and those are the people you need to really be focused in on. So that way they're helping you when you're feeling like you're dragging, because you're like taking on everybody else's stuff. They're able to put you in good position. So they need that just as much as we do.
That's right. And that text isn't about you. It's not. So if you're sending that text right now, because as soon as my guy Ryan said that, somebody popped in your head. Somebody, whether it's a coworker, a friend, a wife, a spouse, a girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, somebody popped in your head, a parent, whatever it might be. So whoever you're sending it to right now, just remember, it's not about you. And their reply, when they reply back and they're mad at you, it's not about you.
Yeah.
You sent that, inviting them to now share what they need to share. So let them share that. All right. We're running out of time, but so I'm going to say this, and I'm going to try not to get emotional, but you're my guy. And man, you have loved my kids.
Yeah.
and you have loved me and you've loved my bride. And we don't see each, I don't know, less than five times we've seen each other IRL in real life. But through the power of the internet, you're always the guy I met on the internet that everybody thinks is weird when I say it, but I met you on the internet, but man, you've loved my kids as if they were your own. And just, I don't know, a year ago, you know, Austin and I were there at your home and man, you embraced us as if we've known each other and live right next door.
Yeah.
And man, you're my guy. And you know that. I hope people that have listened to this will also embrace you and follow you. And you're just my guy. And I don't know, just some crazy documentary.
Yeah.
God had that in design. And I love that how he stitched that together. It's an amazing story. It'll be in my book if I ever write. But
Aaron,
I just love you. And I'm so honored to walk with you.
Two empaths together are probably going to ball their eyes out in a second here, but it's, let me start by not filtering and just saying, thank you. Your family has meant the world to me. You know, going through marriage, divorce, kids, all these different kinds of things has always been a challenge and tough, but you guys have been a really great example. And those are the things that we need. So an example, not only in doing well, but how to do it wrong. You know what I mean? Like how to get through rough times together.
Yeah.
And I think that is always the understanding in families and friendships. The best way we can operate is that we operate in a default. Our default mechanism is care, is love. And that's the same thing I witnessed with you guys. That's why, you know, with your crew, like your kids are awesome, man. Like I'm like, man, I'd hang out with Austin all day long. I mean, he's cooler than you. And so
he's way cooler than me.
And you know, Heather's smile lights up the room. You know, like these kind of things are such an amazing, amazing thing for people. And I can't believe you guys live in Columbus, Ohio.
I know.
You know what I mean? And so shout out to if you guys can see this back here. For those who can't see it, it's a national championship trophy from the University of Michigan poster. So anyways, but I say all that to say that, you know, you have been such a pivotal piece of who I've even grown to be. And I've probably grown more in my life over the last 10 years did in 40 before it. It's crazy. I turned 50 in a week and a couple of days on April 1st. Shout out to all the April Fool babies. But I turned 50 years old, half a century. And I've been not thinking like, oh my gosh, I'm getting old. I feel like I'm just getting my wheelhouse. But I felt like I wasted 40 years because only the past 10 have I really been awakened to the really good of things and figuring out what it is. So here we are. And I'm like, man, I'm just so thankful that we've been that iron sharpening space for each other. And that I'm hoping more men, women, everybody has that kind of person in their life. It's I tell kids all the time, relationships will change your life. Well, it keeps going into adulthood because you've been a part of that for me. So I appreciate you. And this is something guys don't do well. We always say, I love you, bro. I love you, man. No. I love you.
100%. 100%. Same. Love you. And, you know, we'll always hop on a plane and I know you do the same or get in my car, you know, when needed. And it's so important to have people in your life like that, that you know that that's that 2 a.m. call when everything just went to crap.
Yep.
Who are you going to call? Well, man, you're going to be one of the first to call because I know you're going to be there. And I hope you all enjoyed today and that Ryan got to come back. I hope he comes back more often. We should do this more often, not every
episode 507. Here we come. Let's get it.
Let's do it before that. Well, I love you, man. My family loves you. I love your family and give them all a big hug. I got to go watch Liberty's Commendation.
Let's go. Let's get it.
See
you. All right, brother.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Unscripted Podcast. Make sure to review and share wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps out our mission to encourage everyone to live life unscripted. Until next time, keep living life unscripted.